The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's Lifeline with Craig Roberts. He's the host of Northern California's longest-running conservative talk show. He's a man with a message, a conservative with compassion. He's Lifeline's own Craig Roberts.
Good afternoon, Northern California. Welcome. Just about 5 minutes after the hour, 5 p.m., as we welcome you to another edition of Lifeline. Keeping you company Monday through Friday at this time, as we typically do, addressing issues that impact your life, your world, and your Christian walk. When you think of it, so much of life has become temporary. There are those of us with a little bit of gray around the temples, old enough to remember the fact that, well, today, no longer do you collect gold watches after, say, 25 or 30 years of service to one company. We no longer raise families and retire in the same home where we spend ultimately 50 or more years in. And our marriages, well, they no longer make it to what was once a typical golden anniversary. Many of these challenges in the way life has changed, particularly related to marriage, goes down to one core issue that is becoming increasingly more challenging under the changes in society today to establish and maintain solid marriage relationships. But before we completely give up hope, there are some important key steps that you can today implement in your married life to change things around in a most dynamic and God-honoring fashion. Joining me now is Dr. Greg Smalley, Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. And Dr. Smalley, great to have you on the program.
Hey, Craig, thank you so much for having me today.
Well, isn't it amazing how so much of life in just, you know, maybe a generation or two has changed so dramatically? Remember Dad working for the same company for 30-something years? They still live in the same house that I was raised in when I was a kid. And today, all of this has changed. We don't keep our jobs as long, we don't live in the same house as long, and sadly, we don't stay in marriages as long either.
Yeah, it's true. And I tell you what, you know, way back in the 70s through I think one of the biggest things is the whole no-fault divorce. And I don't think people really realize how much that has really hurt us. That's why I'm thrilled as a country that right now, you know what, marriage is in the news all over the place, and I'm hoping that part of the outcome will be that we really, you know, that we realize, like Hebrews 13:4 says, that marriage should be honored by all, that we really learn as a country again, how do we honor marriage? What is that going to look like?
Here's the absolute irony. You talk about no-fault divorce, and what we're really saying is, well, if it's nobody's fault, then it must be everybody's fault.
Right.
We all play a role in this, and toward that end, you've come up with some key steps that I think we can go to school on today to help people better understand the important relational moments. And, you know, we know that good marriages take time and they take work, but if you begin to break it down into all of the incremental elements, a lot of this stuff, quite frankly, is just good common sense if we just take the time enough to examine it and begin putting it into practice in our daily relational lives.
Absolutely. You know, I believe one of the best things that we can do for our marriage is that we've got to learn how to work through and manage conflict. You know, there's a lot that we need to do for marriage, but if we started there, because it's inevitable, it's going to happen. You know, you can't take two people, you know, who have different personalities and genders and all these things and expect that they're not going to bump into each other, that they're not going to, you know, have conflict, they're not going to hurt and wound each other. And the problem that I see is that so many people are afraid to go through conflict. They avoid it, they sweep it under the rug, they want to ignore it. And the truth is that conflict can be used in our marriage to strengthen our marriage. That's when I get to learn more about my wife, her feelings, her needs. I get to learn more about myself. You know, and, you know, maybe it shows something's going on in our marriage that needs to change. I mean, conflict really is a good thing if we can learn how to do this in a healthy way.
And this is so key, because what you're suggesting then, Dr. Smalley, is that, and oftentimes we'll couch this in terms of, well, I can't get along with my wife because, and we'll pile a bunch of baggage there, or the husband, whatever the case might be, suggesting that there's some sort of a personality defect here. But what you're really talking about, and I took note of the fact, you didn't say avoid conflict, you said manage it,
right?
Be able to work through it. So this isn't a personality defect, it's a skill deficit.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, because I think a lot of times we use the phrase even conflict resolution. And I don't know about you, but I don't think the goal is to try to figure out some resolution so much as it is the process. Can we develop a process that we can use anytime conflict comes up? So whether we resolve it or not, it's not the issue. I think it's how we do it. And unfortunately, most couples do this in a way that just doesn't work. And one of the biggest things that I see with couples is that we're taught to, when we get into an argument, when we get hurt, when there's a problem, that we need to just hang in there and power through it and try to talk it through. And I think that is the biggest and worst advice that you can give a couple. Because one, I don't think it works. When you're hurt, when you're wounded, when you're upset, when you're frustrated with your spouse, what I think is going on is you get these buttons of yours, these emotions get pushed, these buttons get pushed, and then your heart literally kind of closes, you shut down, and then you just start reacting. And in that mode, there is no way that you're listening, you're not able to hear, you're not able to understand. And that's why when people are in an argument, they need to kind of separate from each other. They need to take a break, a time out from each other. But I'm telling you, Craig, we're not taught to do that. We are taught to try to power through it. Don't let the sun go down in your anger. I mean, it's setting people up for massive failure. And that's really what I did in the book, was to try to show you, here's a process. Because what I love is that if you take a break and work on you first, you need to learn how to get your heart back open. Because when people have open hearts, we're able to talk all day long.
And this is so key, because I would imagine in your role as Executive Director of the Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family, you're hosting a nationally syndicated radio talk show, you've got patients, you've written books, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
That you talk and hear from people all the time, this whole issue of conflict. It sounds to me that this is perhaps then less about conflict. At the end, it's not this major difference between the two of us. In fact, we both sides of the marriage really want the same thing, don't we? That
yeah.
is to the right to be heard and the need to hear.
Right. We want to, people want connection. We want to be connected. We want intimacy. We want to be heard, understood, listened to, like you were talking about. And it's just sadly what happens is that in that moment that we're hurt or in conflict or whatever it is, that we are just taught to keep trying to push through that. And it doesn't work. That's why one of my very favorite verses is in Matthew 7:2-5. It says, "Why do you look at the dust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the log in your own eye?" And I love that the scriptures give an order. It says, first, get the log out of your own eye. Then you can see clearly. And how I relate that back to conflict is saying, okay, when you're in the middle of an argument, you have to understand that your heart has now closed. You are shut down. And when you are shut down, you are more likely to react, to say things, to do things, to retreat, in a way that's not going to help you get to where you want to be. Therefore, quit trying to talk this through first. That's part two. Part one is that I need to go off by myself and figure out what is going on. I need to let my emotions settle down. I need to, for me, prayer is such a great time to just to settle down, to get God's perspective, to say, hey, God, I don't know what's going on, but boy, I'm mad about something. What is the button that got pushed? How do you want me to treat my wife? You created her. Help me to understand her. You see what I'm saying? I mean, if you work on you first and get your heart back open, see, then you can come back into that conversation. And I promise you, it will go so much differently. We fail at communicating through conflict because usually both hearts are closed. And there, you just can't talk through that.
And so often, though, we also, Dr. Smalley, put so many expectations and demands on the other.
Oh, yeah.
That we can't control. And yet what we can control, we do nothing with. So
right.
If we're concerned, for example, about the fact that we feel as if we're not being heard, our spouse is not hearing me, and yet we've closed down and we're so focused on what we're not getting that we ourselves are not hearing our spouse either.
Right.
Well, one is an observation, but the other is something that I can actively change and that I have 100% control over.
Totally. I mean, that's, again, I can control me. I can choose how I want to show up. And that's why I say to people, you've got to have a break. You just got to step away. Tell your spouse, you know what? Right now, I can't think clearly. I'm shut down. I'm going to go, but I'll be back. And that's, I think that's the what we do to then set up the opportunity to really to work through conflict. If I can get my heart back open. See, now I tell people, you know how your heart is open is when you want to be a listener, when you are willing to be a listener. I love in the Chinese language, there's the character, the symbol for the verb to listen is made up of three kind of little characters that come together. One stands for eyes, one for ears, and the other for open heart. Isn't that cool?
Mm.
So to listen is with your ears, your eyes, and your open heart. That's the evidence to me that you're ready to enter back into that conversation, that dialogue with your spouse when you are going, I want to seek to understand you rather than me being understood.
Dr. Greg Smalley is with us today. He, of course, Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. Information, too, on the web at SmalleyMarriage.com. We'll take a brief time out. Come back to more of the conversation as this edition of Lifeline with Dr. Greg Smalley continues here on KFAX.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back to Lifeline. Craig Roberts, along with our special guest in this edition of the program, he's Dr. Greg Smalley, Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He co-hosts Everyday Relationships and is the president and founder of the Smalley Relationship Center. You can get more information on the web, in addition to information about his more than 40 books on the topic, at SmalleyMarriage.com. That's SmalleyMarriage.com. But Dr. Smalley, just before the break, we were talking about the need to kind of step back from the conflict instead of just trying to pile through, because that piling through process often means just making a lot of noise, working a lot, very hard to be heard, but not really hearing.
Right.
And you made mention, I found it fascinating toward the end of the last segment, about the Chinese character for hearing that has to do with both open eyes, open ears, and an open heart. So I guess it's kind of pulling back, moving into neutral corners, so to speak, and taking account. It's amazing how many arguments will suddenly build up and gain momentum, and that train is heading down the track with no brakes, when we take a moment to step back and really ask ourselves the question, what is this all about? We either find out that there's a whole lot to do about nothing, or that it's connected to some other hurt or pain that happened in our life that might have just been sort of reactivated by something that our spouse did or said.
That's right. That's right. And that's why I'm telling people that usually it's not that we can't communicate, that we've got to learn some new communication method. I'm telling you, the problem of why we have a hard time communicating is when your heart closes, you've got these buttons that are all stirred up, and you're frustrated, you're shut down, you're now in a reaction mode. And that's why the biggest, most important step in learning how to communicate through conflict is you dealing with you. And you can't do that in the presence of your spouse. You really do need to step back. And that's why I always tell people, when you're sort of in this timeout spot, what you're trying to do is, one, there is power in putting a name to how you're feeling. And again, when we're in the middle of a conflict, we're not even able to think about how am I feeling right now and put a word to that. And yet there's research that was done that showed that when in the middle of an argument, when people separate and they think through, okay, what is it that I'm feeling right now? I'm feeling, you know, devalued, disrespected, not good enough, like a failure. I mean, when you put a word to how you're feeling, it physiologically calms you down. They see on these brain scans to where the amygdala, which is your fight or flight center, it's kind of the emotional part of your brain, is all lit up. When you identify how you feel, the brain scan showed that all of a sudden that information moves to the prefrontal cortex, which is where you make good decisions.
Mm.
And so even the act of simply going, all right, I'm separated now, I'm on my own. How do I feel? What's the word that I would use? It has tremendous power. It's that simple. And then I think as Christians, what's so cool is that we take then those emotions to the Lord, and we're asking for His truth. What is true about me? Is it true that I'm a failure? Is it true that I'm being disrespected? What's true about my wife? You know, and I love that I think it's so many verses that talk about how you know, God is truth, that He gives us the Spirit of truth. The Spirit of truth will lead us to all truth. You know, that you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And that's what I love. You, when you're then able to do that, you now can come back in and just do what you were born to do, which is you can talk through things with your spouse when you're calmed down and your heart's open.
And you know, at the end of the day, reopening those lines of communication, or sometimes establishing them for the first time, as much as that seems to be particularly intimidating, particularly for us guys that don't do a real good job emoting, and we get very intimidated by this idea, in that sense that, well, my wife does all the talking and I do all the listening, things of that sort. You've put together a list of 5 daily relational moments that I think, Dr. Smalley, really go a long way toward teaching us just how easy it can be to communicate at that level so that the needs are getting met by both sides of the couple. Take a moment, if you would, in the three or four minutes that we have left in our conversation, just walk us through, if you would, these 5 daily important relational moments.
Absolutely. You know, and why I think these moments are so important is that I think you could kind of boil everything down to doing this. If you want to have a great marriage, you need to, one, learn how to manage conflict well. But then on the other hand, you've got to learn how to proactively invest in your marriage every day. Marriage doesn't have cruise control. You can't set a setting and think it's going to be okay. So as long as you're managing conflict, investing in your marriage, I mean, I'm telling you, you're going to have a good marriage. And I think one of the best ways to invest in your marriage, instead of adding all kinds of new things to your already busy plate, you know, because, Craig, I see that so many people are so busy, exhausted, worn out, too much going on, overflowing plate, that when I tell people, hey, instead of adding, you know, 5 more things you need to do now for your marriage, what if we just looked at what's going on every day and take advantage of those, use those everyday moments to strengthen your marriage? For example, every day you're going to leave the house, you know, during the work week. How you choose to leave your home can either strengthen your marriage or take away from your marriage. And what we know is if you take a moment and just, you know, let's say you pray for your spouse, you encourage them, and give each other a kiss goodbye, that right there, you've strengthened your marriage. That should take no more than 10 seconds. See, you're not adding something else. You will leave the house. How you choose to leave can strengthen your marriage. You're going to return home. You know, how you come home and re-enter your house in the evening can be used to strengthen your marriage or not. So when I come in, do I beeline for the TV? Do I beeline for the kids? Or do I walk up to my wife and say, hey, great to see you. You know, love you. Give her a kiss. Can't wait to spend time with you tonight. You mean just something that simple. Again, you don't add anything. You're going to walk into your home. Just walk into your home in a way that's going to strengthen your marriage. You're going to fall asleep at some point. How you say goodnight to your spouse can strengthen your marriage. Simply taking 30 seconds to pray for your spouse, to thank him or her for something they did throughout the day that you appreciated. Thanks for, hey, picking up my dry cleaning today. That was a big help. I mean, you see what I'm saying? It's just, it's identifying some key moments. You know, during the day as we're gone, you know, can I not send a quick little text message to my wife? I mean, I'm going to be gone. Why not just send her a text message and just tell her, love you, thinking about her? I actually did this the other day and accidentally, I mean, I got into sort of this crazy little message to my wife, sent it to my boss by mistake. And so he texts me back going, please tell me this was meant for your
yeah,
wife.
I love you thinking about you.
Absolutely. And I said, no, it was for you. But that made our meeting awkward. But anyway, but you see what I'm saying? I mean, there are moments. You know, for you, the moment might be we're taking our kids to their sporting practice. You know, well, can you use that to ask each other questions? You can listen to the radio. You can do a bunch of stuff. You can be on the phone. Or we can ask each other just some great questions. Hey, you know, what, you know, how'd today go? How are you feeling? How are things going between you and the kids? You know, what's one thing God's teaching you as of late? You see, there are moments that go on that I think most of us just let these moments go by. And let's take those back and use them as things that can really strengthen our marriage.
And, of course, the irony is it doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't take a very little minimal amount of effort. It's simply giving a greater sense of importance to our spouse, to a sense of honoring them and valuing them. Oh, it's the old saying, is, you know, it's the little things in life that count.
Right.
And it would be amazing to see how far. And I want to challenge both the ladies and the men in the audience. Try it. Oh, you don't understand how difficult things are in my marriage right now. Purpose in your heart today to start tomorrow. When you get up in the morning, compliment your spouse. Honey, I'm glad that you're my spouse. I hope you have a great day. Speak words of encouragement into their life as, you know, your husband is going off and, you know, he's got the big meeting today. Say some words of encouragement. Stop at the door for a minute, guys, before you're leaving and saying, honey, I know it takes a lot of time and energy to maintain this household. I know you've got a big agenda today. You got to take the kids to soccer practice and you've got a doctor's appointment. You got to go shopping and all these things. I just want to let you know I value you and I recognize and appreciate the hard work that you do in creating such a loving home for us. Wow, how far that will go. And then, as Dr. Smalley points out, look, even the guys, we got time to check the box scores in the middle of the day. Send a quick text. Try not to send it to your boss, though. And let your spouse know, thinking of you, babe. I hope you're having a great day. Can't wait to see you tonight. When you arrive back home, pause for a moment. You realize that your spouse, if she's been home all day, maybe young kids in your family, she's been really deprived of any adult communication. She's eager to connect with you. You, on the other hand, you've been out in the working world all day long. You don't want another conversation. Find a moment, if you can, between the two of you to just acknowledge each other and each other's needs for a moment. And then finally, as you end the day, to show a sense of gratitude and appreciation, a moment in prayer together. And if you implement these steps, I think you'll see an amazing turnabout in your marriage relationship. Dr. Greg Smalley, Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. More information, too, on the web at his website, SmalleyMarriage.com. And Dr. Smalley, thanks so much for the time today.
Oh, Craig, my pleasure. Thanks for all that you're doing to encourage marriage.
You bet. Keep up the good work on your end as well. There's Dr. Greg Smalley from Focus on the Family.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
We often talk to the folks at the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association that are working to repeal a portion of Proposition 19. Now, it was touted as the Property Tax Portability Bill. We're going to allow folks that are 55 plus to take their current tax rate, go buy a different house of equal value in another county, and carry the tax rate with them. While that's nice, what they didn't tell you with that fine print part, that the heirs, the children and grandchildren who have received a home from grandfolks or from mom and dad, they're being taxed right out of their homes because you've got 1 year from the date the doctor says, we're sorry to inform you, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa have passed away. You've got 1 year to move into that home and call it yours. Or they reevaluate and there would be a current market valuation on that property, which means you inherited the home, you inherited grandma, grandpa, mom, or dad's tax rate, that will just poof disappear, and you'll be right up there as if you just bought the house fresh off the market Tuesday. Wow. Pretty rough. And it really puts a spotlight on the broader issue of just how critically important it is to be mindful of estate planning and to realize that the laws are changing. They are evolving. And so just because you did it once, this is not a one and done kind of proposition by any means. Your family circumstances change, so your estate planning needs to change. And as the laws change, making sure that what you wrote in that plan a year ago, 5 years ago, 10, 20 years ago is still appropriate and applicable, both in the eyes of the law and for your circumstances. So what are the pitfalls? What are the things that you need to be mindful of as we head into a new year? This really needs to be an agenda item for you. If you care about leaving a financial legacy for your children or grandchildren, or making sure that the kind of financial stewardship that's important to you is there in place, and that your wishes, once you're no longer here, are going to be respected, then you need to have a plan in place. But what sort of a plan? Well, let's get some insights. We're joined by an expert in this arena. He has a practice devoted to the area of estate planning. He's a member of Phi Beta Kappa, the American Bar Association, of course, California State Bar, San Francisco Estate Planning Council, and the Society of Financial Service Professionals, and I haven't even named them all, but a delight to have join us today, estate planning attorney Frank Parrish. Frank, welcome. Merry Christmas.
Greg Roberts, a sincere pleasure to be with you again.
Boy, Frank, this is such a complicated aspect of the law, and I think a lot of folks that maybe on the periphery have heard terms like wills and living trusts and think, well, you know, I just jot it down on a piece of paper and I should be good to go. Or, you know, yeah, I think mom and dad, they did a will about 30 years ago, so it was nothing for us to worry about. Spend a few minutes, if you would, first, just sort of at the top level, educating people on some of the complexities and some of the differences between these different legal modalities related to estate planning and making sure that your wishes are carried out once you're gone.
Well, I believe the beginning point for people to recognize several different considerations. Many times people are scared to death over taxation, but today, the issue of estate taxation really is not the motivating factor in doing estate planning, from the standpoint that two decades ago, the exemption from estate tax was dramatically reduced. Today, a single individual in 2023 can have an estate of over $12,920,000 that is a single individual and pay zero estate tax. In addition, that will increase next year in excess of $13 million. Adding to that, California has no inheritance tax. We haven't had for several decades, and it's very unlikely that we will have in the foreseeable future. So you come back and say, well, wait a minute, if you don't have any estate tax issues and there's no taxation considerations, then am I not home scot-free? And the answer is no, because you come back to that very basic point of saying those who fail to plan, plan to fail. And we see it day in and day out in this law practice. The issue of estate planning, and I share with clients time and time again, the most difficult issues are not tax related. They are all personal. And the reason why is because personal decisions, and I'm not a moral relativist, and you know me very well, but many times when I sit down with clients and they begin with filling out a questionnaire, which causes people, when you write things down, it causes you to begin to think through things more clearly. But basic questions such as, who do you want as the guardian for your child? And that's critically important for young married couples with minor children. Becomes more important with younger couples with minor children to have a will than it is for individuals my own age, because the guardian provisions are only contained in a will. They are not contained in a trust. Now, am I saying that a trust isn't important? The complete antithesis. If you have an estate plan, 9 out of 10 times you should have a separate document, whether you're married or single, called a revocable living trust. And focus on those three words, beginning revocable. meaning you can change it, you can modify it during your lifetime. Living, it's established during your lifetime, versus a will, which only becomes effective at date of death. A trust is effective immediately, and it transcends death and can continue on for a spouse, for children, for grandchildren, however you want to structure it. But thirdly, it is a trust. It is a separate document from your will. The person, pardon me, trust can be created by married individuals or single. The person who creates them is called the settlor. The manager of the assets is the trustee, and those who receive benefits are the beneficiaries. And primarily, you can be the three in one, just as the Trinity. You can be the creator of the trust, you can be the manager, and you're also the lifetime beneficiary. The great thing of a trust is, not only can you be the beneficiary for your lifetime, but at your date of death, it can continue on, whether it is for a spouse, whether it is for children, grandchildren, not that it can go on in perpetuity forever, but it can go on a great deal longer than simply leaving things outright. And the main process that I go through with clients in meeting with them, and I think you know well enough in having worked with me in the past, I do not like to be told what to do, and I understand that no client cares to be told what to do. My goal as an attorney is not telling an individual what to do, but I view it as alerting them to what planning options they have.
You know, that's so critically important too, Frank, because to understand not only in terms of what the options are, to make sure that you have multiple layers of contingencies, because what we put in place today that seems to make perfect sense can change in the twinkling of an eye. It doesn't even have to be a matter of, well, the trust document is 30 years old, people that are in there are dead. I mean, it can be simply as simple as a child isn't suddenly making some wrong decisions. Well, you had designated them as your successor trustee. Now you're questioning their judgment. Is there a plan in place? Or what happens if you say, here's the person that I've designated to be my successor trustee who's going to manage all of this upon my passing, and that individual predeceases you? What happens? Well, so many of these aspects, and I think you're hopefully starting to get the picture that this is not one and done, as I suggested in my opening remarks, that there are layers of complexities. Now, the good news is that there are experts like Frank Parrish available that can help walk you through, guide you through, give you a really good sense as to what your options are, so that ultimately you can make decisions for yourself that carries out your wishes, and most importantly, is best for what you want to accomplish with the estate that you have worked so hard to establish. Joining me today, estate planning attorney Frank Parrish, devoted to the area of estate planning, as we mentioned, for many, many years. And we're going to unpack some of the layers of the complexities and help you understand that sometimes, for example, even establishing a trust, well, that's just kind of step A. What happens if you establish the trust but then don't retitle assets? We'll talk about that next. We'll continue our conversation. Frank Parrish, our guest today. Information, by the way, on the web at parrishestatelaw.com. That's parrishestatelaw.com. A timeout, back with more as Lifeline continues.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
So not too long ago, an acquaintance of mine lost a parent, and, after the funeral services and so forth, and happened to touch bases just to see how they were doing after the parent had passed, and said, well, you know, we're in the middle of, working on the estate and so forth. Okay, and then happened to run into them like 6 months later and said, so, you know, you pretty much got everything wrapped up. Oh, you won't believe what a mess I had. This is going to be years to untangle it. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, it would seem as if Mom did put together a trust, but after signing the documents, they got you know, put away in the closet on the shelf and forgotten about, and nothing else ever took place. And whatever attorney that they were working with at the time either failed to remind them or inform them, whatever, that it's not just a matter of reducing everything down into writing as to what your wishes are, but then you have to make sure that once you've created that trust, that you do something called funding it. And if you miss out on that big step, dependent upon the nature of the asset, as we're going to learn from estate planning expert and attorney Frank Parrish, that can be a big problem, and it can welcome you to probate court whether you want to be there or not. And maybe, Frank, you can shed some light on why that is and why, in my example of this friend, that they wound up having such a big mess on their hands because, you know, mom thought, well, we've signed the document here. What do you mean I have to do more?
Sure. The main consideration, Craig, that you've alerted listeners to is the fact a person may have beautifully drafted document, and I'll come back and say, you know, it isn't worth the paper on which it is printed unless it is funded. And the term funding is just analogous to retitling or coordinating assets. So if a person establishes a trust, then the point is you need to fund it. In other words, retitle. If you have a home and it's titled in, say, you're unmarried and it's in your name alone, and you have a grant deed to that property, well, you need to have a new deed prepared transferring it into your name as trustee of your revocable living trust, or a married couple. And this applies to all real estate that you own. And in doing that, one, you avoid probate if it's titled in the trust to date of death. Two, none of the distribution provisions of that trust are public record like it would be under a will. Three, if you become incapacitated during your lifetime, you avoid the need for any form of conservatorship or guardianship or court-appointed administration of an incapacitated individual's affairs. So these are just the lifetime benefits by titling the property into the trust. That deals with real estate. But then we go one step further. We say, well, what about bank accounts? Those should be titled in the trust as well as brokerage accounts. Any type of other investments, with the exception of IRAs, pension plans, retirement accounts. Those investments, IRAs, pension plans, 401k plans, they cannot be titled in a trust. You can name the trust as a beneficiary, but the account that itself, an IRA, cannot be titled in a trust. Property tax?
Correct.
Are we talking about, or are we talking about income tax step up in cost basis?
No, just start with simple. Just the property tax.
The property tax scenario, there's a very strong likelihood there would be a reassessment of the property at the death of the first co-tenant, because it's not going to a surviving spouse, it's not going to a family member, and they may not be residing in that property. So I hate to sound like the typical attorney, it all depends, but it really does. But, and then adding to that is the further complication that the person will say, well, I wanted to pass to, you know, my business partner or to the person with whom I'm residing, whatever. But if you don't have it titled, for example, in that situation, joint tenants with right of survivorship, suppose you have a tenants in common, your half, the date of death of the first co-tenant, the co-tenant's half of the property will end up going through probate. So, you know, the issues are unbelievably complicated, and many times clients create these situations not intentionally. They can get themselves into unbelievably complex situations, not out of any intent to create complexity, but it's just the nature of the beast.
And you know, Frank, what just absolutely alarms me is that sometimes there are examples, and I'm sure you run into this in your practice all the time, where people have spent a lifetime working hard, scrimping, saving, paying taxes, paying interest, things of this sort, to build an estate, to build some assets that they want to pass on to their son or daughter, or to their favorite charity, or the cat, you know, whatever it might be. And then when it comes to such matters as the legal basis related to one's passing, think that getting something online for $35, well, it said it's applicable in the state of California. I thought, why spend all this money for an attorney? I went to the Nolo Press website, not to pick on Nolo Press. They provide a lot of great stuff. But this is probably not an area where you want to spend $35 for an online document to manage your assets, which if you own a home in California, even if it's a shack, it's probably worth $750,000. So I hope you're getting the idea here that this is not something that you want to go it alone. You really need to have an attorney that is not a generalist in everything. In other words, if your attorney is suing somebody for, you know, a dog bite on Tuesday, a slip and fall on Thursday, and copyright violation on Friday, probably not your guy or gal. You need to have somebody who really understands the complexities of the law, the multiple layers, and also can coach you through to make sure that as your life changes, your estate plan changes with it, as the law changes, that you're able to adapt to that, and that every single I is dotted and T is crossed, as Frank Parrish just alluded to a few moments ago. It's one thing to go through all the time, all of the investment to prepare a living will or an estate plan, and then simply never get around to titling any of the assets in the name of the trust, and all of a sudden you find yourself staring, or not you, but you, whoever your executor is staring in front of a judge, in probate. That was never your intention, but because you didn't follow through, suddenly you find, or your estate finds itself there anyway. It's complex. The estate planning attorney Frank Parrish with us tonight. By the way, if you want to get information from Frank about your circumstances, maybe you're one of those people that has not had a review of your estate plan in years, and there's been marriages and new grandkids have shown up, and maybe even the tragedy of a divorce. You've not looked at the way things are titled, everything from your IRAs, your 401k plan, certainly your estate plan or insurance plans, insurance policies, things of that sort, as well as just making sure that what you intended to do is actually going to take place. Then reach out to Frank. You can find him online at Parrish Estate Law. com. That's P-A-R-R-I-S-H, Parrish Estate Law. com. And you'll find Frank not only very knowledgeable, but a great guy to talk to. And as he said early on, it's not to try to force his will or tell you what to do, but rather to make sure you understand the totality of the options, the risks, the contingencies, so you make the right decision to make sure that your desires are going to be fulfilled when you're no longer with us. Time out. Back to more of our conversation as Lifeline continues.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.